Hello, you're listening to Laser Graves, a podcast where we dig up movies, music, books, and events from the 80s and discuss how rad they were. Laser Graves, and we're back for another episode. I am your co-host, E.K. Wimmer.
I am your other co-host. My name is Mariah Rose Wimmer. I really, really thought for a second you were going to say, I'm Eric and this is The Grind.
I'm Eric and this is The Grind.
Yes.
Nope, because this is an 80s podcast, not a 90s podcast.
Oh, darn it. I almost forgot.
Yeah.
Let's start a 90s podcast just so we can do the hip-hop air horn.
Oh, that would be pretty cool.
That would be obnoxious after like one episode.
It's already obnoxious thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm angry a little bit. Well, for a little palate cleanser, I have a joke for you.
Oh, good. Tell a joke.
What did the octogenarian pirate say on his birthday?
What?
Aye, matey.
What? Get it.
Because to be an octogenarian, you're 80.
Oh, I'm 80.
Aye, matey.
Okay. Cool. Good one.
It was a good joke.
Yeah. Well,
somebody wrote it. I remembered it.
Okay. Well, so we're back. That's how we're opening the show.
You're not cutting that joke out. It's good. Somebody will check.
No, I'm definitely keeping that in. Are you kidding? That was gold. That was
comic gold.
Mariah unleashed, ready to do the stand-up.
That's like my standard level of comedy, too, is just mediocre jokes.
Dad jokes.
Mm-hmm. But I'm a mother.
It's true. That's complicated.
Oh, I think it's a gender bias that dads get bad jokes. Like, I make bad jokes all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Way to reclaim the jokes. Mm-hmm.
Smash the patriarchy.
One dad joke at a time. Did you do any thrift store shopping this week? I don't think you have. No, we didn't really do anything.
I don't know. Where am I? What's going on?
Yeah, I was trying to think about compared to last week, too, and I can't remember anymore.
Well, it's weird. We actually just hung out with friends this past week.
Yeah.
I saw several friends and zero thrift stores.
In lieu of a thrift store, and I don't normally do this, but it was my birthday, and you got me a gift card to eBay so that I could maybe pick up a tape or two that I don't, that I can't normally get or find or afford. And I'm usually against this, but I'm starting to be like, whatever. And so I picked up a handful of them. I took this very seriously. I was kind of shocked because it was not a lot of money, but
it was so much money. I gave you an enormous gift card.
I was like, well, I could get one, or I could get maybe three cheaper ones for the same price. And then I struggled with it for a good week.
Well, here's the thing. When I got that for you, I was like, gift or VHS is worth, in my mind, 10 cents.
Mm-hmm.
That is the maximum amount a human should pay for VHS. So I was like, I bought him a lifetime supply of VHS.
Yeah, until you go on eBay and you realize it buys like one.
What is wrong with people? Whatever.
It's like anything, but I really struggled and I finally settled.
No, it's not like anything. I'm going to interrupt you because Beanie Babies.
Yeah, but Beanie Babies aren't cool. They're not like slasher flicks with awesome artwork and hilarious plots.
There are 1,000 Dorises out there crying because they put all of their, like, every penny they saved, every nickel that they earned into Beanie Baby money. And they're waiting.
So you think a Beanie Baby should be worth the same amount of money as like a copy of Ghoulies or something like that. You wouldn't be like, or Night of the Creeps. Let's say you found Night of the Creeps mm-hmm. on VHS and there's a Beanie Baby of like a Siamese cat right next to it. You mm-hmm. think they should be the same price?
You know what I think they should do? Package deal. The Beanie Baby should embrace the VHS tape and a quarter.
And you know
one
what?
Quarter.
There should be a little string tied around both of them as a package with a little note that says, thrill me.
Thrill me.
No, I did pick up some, though. I got a real cheap one that I've just been needing to fill in, Ghost of Mars from John Carpenter. But the score was a double package of, oh, wow, you're really... really gone off on your own here.
I'm just laughing between the thrill of a Beanie Baby.
Well, to be determined. Each their own. Oh, or that lucky few that are thrilled by both the Beanie Baby and the VHS. Whoa. Put in the tape and snuggle with your Beanie Baby as you're watching your movie.
I feel like that might be your future.
Yeah. And very sincerely think so. I found The Gate Part 1 and 2, which we've never owned, and I'm very excited about that. So when those come in, I think we should maybe do an episode on, maybe double episode. This week is a fun one. Have you ever seen the movie we're about to discuss?
No.
Okay, I haven't either. I recognized clips just because of kind of... social media, when you're like involved in a certain kind of community, especially on social media, you see clips come up and you're like, oh, I wonder what that movie's from or what that clip is from, what movie. And then we'll get to it. But there's a very, very specific scene in this movie. Mm-hmm. And a light went off and I was like, oh, that's the movie that everybody always posts this clip from, because I had not seen this movie.
Was it the dance scene?
No, it's even better than that.
Oh, okay.
But this is a first time watch for me, too. I did. This one has just never been on my radar. I didn't even know about it.
I had no idea.
I found it on VHS at a thrift store a while back, and it looked really cool. It had a perfect cover.
Wait.
Grace Jones is in it. Huh?
What does VHS stand for?
I don't know. Video home... I don't know. I've never cared.
You can't adopt one more VHS until you know what it stands for.
Dude, it stands for Video Home System. Everybody knows that.
You better not edit this.
I did not just look it up.
No, you cannot edit this. Where it's like...
I control. I'm like...
No.
Exercising my God rights as the editor of this podcast.
Oh, we've got a complex now. Lay it all on the dance floor.
I'm going to... lay it all on my chest.
What? Where's
and then
this
I'm going?
Going
to lay on my back on the dance floor, pull my knees up to my chest like a potato bug, and then I'm going to have three people spin me. And wherever it goes off my chest is where I'm going to leave it on the dance floor. This week we are covering Vamp, 1986. First time watch for both of us.
Yes.
Directed by Richard Wenk. Wenk? Wenk?
Spell
W-E-N-K.
It. Wank.
He's a duck. came out of retirement from the Affleck commercial to do
Affleck,
this one.
Affleck, wank.
Oh, you just did that. And, okay. So, Vamp, you know what, when the film started, one thing I loved was the title sequence. The word vamp then grew teeth.
Yeah, the V and the center of the M were the fangs, and then there was like a kiss mark around it.
Yeah, that's cool. That's what drew me in with the movie. Before I flipped it over and saw who the star was, well, I mean, I guess she's on the cover too, but the first thing I noticed was the kiss mark with the fangs.
That's pretty cool.
In my 20s, I would have had that tattooed on me. In a second, because it was really cool.
Good graphic.
Instead,
design.
I'll have to settle for the Starship Troopers logo.
The only...
death from above.
Oh, I was going to go with the only good bug is a dead bug.
That wouldn't be very vegan. written by Richard Wenk also. And
Wank.
And Donald Barshers. All of these names are just not making sense to me.
Okay.
They sound fake. It opens with some pretty dramatic music.
It's like a monastery is what it looks like.
And the music is very kind of omen-esque, like, ho, 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 you know, like, the, like yeah. you know, the chanting, yeah. like, priests or whatever.
Yeah, so it's like a monastery place. There are a bunch of robed people. They're leading some kind of bummed out guys.
Into like a bell tower. And yes. I just wrote, this looks like a bell tower on a university. And I thought, this is a pretty weak set that they couldn't even like get off campus to shoot this.
Well, it's clearly American. So they're yeah. like, let's go to a university in California. So they lead these guys who look kind of bummed, but not like super upset, to a noose. There are two nooses hanging. So apparently it's supposed to be like a supreme sacrifice.
Yeah, like a satanic ritual.
And there's like another dude who's swinging there. He's all blue and like, because he's already been sacrificed. Mm-hmm. And then there's like a deep voice that comes in and it's like, blah, 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 sacrifice. And then, yep. And then it's a direct quote. And then like one of the robed people shows his own neck marks and you get a sense that like, if they hang and survive, they're part of this group.
Well, I immediately figured it out.
I did not.
Really?
I didn't.
When I saw it was a bell tower in a university, I was like, that's pretty weak. They didn't even try and cover that up. And then when I noticed the two leads, I thought, oh, this is a hazing on a college campus.
Which it was, yes.
Okay.
And then I wrote, oh, it's a Greek thing.
Yeah, it's a hazing gone bad because the tape breaks with the fake voice on it. And then the two leads really...
They lay into
boy, they really overact right away.
They don't hold back. They've got their finger on the pulse of the overacting vein.
The lead actor, AJ, I was like, man, I know this guy from somewhere.
Where?
Well, I get him confused with one guy who looks just like him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always, when the other guy is on screen with a movie we watch, I go, it's the guy from Sometimes They Come Back. And it never is.
You think everybody's the guy from Sometimes
This
they
is
come
the guy
back.
From Sometimes They Come Back. So.
So you, it paid
he's
off.
He's from Weird Science, too. But it's just a 80s
Is
actor.
He one of the guys that hangs out with Robert Downey Jr.? Because I thought he looked like he wanted to be Robert Downey Jr.
So that is actually the guy. So finally, I feel like I can move on with my life.
Please do.
It's like that time when we were going through Astoria, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, this looks like where Goonies was filmed. And you said, you say everything on the West Coast, like the Pacific Northwest is where Goonies was filmed.
Well, you did that from Seaside all the way to Astoria.
But I had a special tingling feeling when I got to Astoria. And I was like, no, this is definitely the Walsh's house area. This is where Goonies was filmed. And you were like, nope. Luckily, it was before cell phones. And so we got to have this debate for the rest of the trip until I could get to a computer and then ultimately be right.
I don't feel like that's how it played out, but I'll let you live in that reality. Anyway, so it's a Greek thing.
Yeah.
And then the two dudes who were about to hang from a noose, AJ is one of them. And the other guy, I didn't find out his name until like the very end.
Keith.
Yeah, so AJ and Keith, they were hazing to get into this, not sorority, fraternity. I mean, whatever.
Sure.
So they're trying to get into a fraternity. They lay into the other Greeks, and they're like, this is terrible. We want in anyway. And so to get in, they decide they're going to find a stripper for this party.
No, it's not that they want in anyway.
Well, they want in because they get free housing and good parties.
No, they lay into them about how much their fraternity sucks.
But they still want in.
No, they don't. Well, they do, but they say that the way they spin it is, your fraternity sucks and we can make it cool. You need to let us
well,
in. And
AJ does that.
We'll make it cool for you. And they're all like, huh? And that's how they get involved is because they decide.
They say they can deliver a stripper.
They're like the coolest people on campus.
Clearly. Yeah. So basically the only thing they really need to do to get in this fraternity is to get a stripper. So they leave with their goal of getting a stripper.
They need three things. Stripper. Really? They need booze and wheels.
Oh. Okay. Well, their dreams don't come
FYI.
True. So Also, this is when we get a little hint that they're into archery because they go back to their dorm and they're shooting arrows.
Just the friend, Keith. He has like a bow and he pulls it out and shoots something.
A target.
And I immediately wrote down, oh, that's going to come into play at the end of the movie.
Thanks, guys. Good writing.
Well, it was good writing. And also, this is when I realized that we're about to watch an 80s party movie, and it made me really happy. Well, I love 80s party movies.
Although, like, disclaimer, because I thought we were going to get back to the fraternity. This is the end of the fraternity.
Dude, that whole entire subplot is gone.
It's over. Yeah, it doesn't
matter. It's totally
matter.
Gone.
They
yeah.
could have just started it with like nobody, three dudes going, let's find a stripper.
No use for anything of that whole first part of the film.
So then the two dudes decide they need a car so they can find somebody who will strip in the city. And then they go upstairs to like a weird, it's like a landing pad for nerds, like a nerd penthouse or something. And they try to get a ride. They get a car in exchange for pretending to be friends with a guy who plays Long Duck Dong on 16 Candles.
Yeah, his name's Getty Watanabe, but he plays Duncan in this.
Duncan, okay.
Yeah, and so Duncan's like, if you're my friend, if you'll be my friend, I'll let you use my car.
That actor, I hope he went on. I have no idea what he did, but bless him for getting cast in these roles that are stupid.
They're stupid, but at the same time...
And kind of racist. Not
sure.
Kind of.
Well, I mean,
racist.
It's inherent to the era. But the thing that I did notice about him, though, was by the end of the film, I was like, do I not like his character or do I not like him as a person? And this is the kind of roles he chooses. But because he was very much like chase and tail the whole entire time.
Yeah, I mean,
and
it's
kind of saying the most like cringeworthy lines. So
they wrote that for him. Please.
Okay, well, that's Duncan. So now we have our three person.
So Duncan's a rich guy who can't have any friends, and he basically buys them by letting them borrow his car.
Yeah, so now they've got wheels. So check that off the list. They've got wheels, and so it's Keith, AJ, and Duncan, and they're gonna go out to try and find a stripper because they see an ad. For what is the place called? Do you remember the name of it?
Nope, didn't even make a note.
Oh, I think I have it written down somewhere else. But there's like an ad called like After Dark or something like that is the name of the club. And they're like, well, this looks interesting. Let's go check it out.
And so they're driving. And the two dudes, AJ and Keith, are singing terribly in the front seat, like showing how cool they are, I guess. It's like a weird scene where they're trying to show how cool AJ and Keith are singing and that Duncan's such a dork because he's in the back seat reading the newspaper.
Yeah. And also, as always, I'm going to bring up the score. It was weird because it was very the perfect mix between Golden Child and Big Trouble in Little China. It was like the beating, you know, but with the like, like weird mystical Asian cinema, like from the 80s.
Yes, Asian in like air quotes, where the it's like,
it was like
an
Golden
80s
Child.
Interpretation.
It was really weird. Mm-hmm. And I was like, is this the same composer? So I looked them up and it was Jonathan Elias. And I thought, I kind of think I know that name, but I don't know why. And I'm looking up his credits. And he did The Watchmen most recent, or one is more recent, but he did Children of the Corn and Leprechaun 2. And I was like, wait a minute. I recognize both of those. And then I nailed it. He's the composer that shared duties with Angelo Badalamenti on Parents.
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Very.
Small world.
Okay. So anyway, back to the car ride. The car goes into a weird spin, like
the longest spin.
Well, I feel like that was supposed to be a transition into an alternate reality or something.
Oh, I didn't catch that. I just thought it was a really long spin.
No, they get like avoid a car accident and just spin around and around and around. And it's after that that things get weird. Like it's like their car stops spinning in a different place, not on the streets. It's, I mean, it's pretty distinctive that they've gone into some like alternate reality like you do.
I believe you. You've got serious face.
I feel real serious about
you're
this.
You're giving this the intellectual polish.
I am. I've got my eyeglasses on, just my monocle, actually.
You know the when in the 80s when they take their the dudes take their glasses and they put them down their nose and mm-hmm. then they give the like wow as a
like, just like you did at the flea market yeah, a couple
as
weeks ago
as it but not to a chick. I was doing it to a stack of records.
Yep.
But I feel like that's what you're doing mm-hmm. with this film. I call it the low brow to the high brow. Like you're making this film more intellectual reading into just what was really just a long spin in a car.
Well, they long spun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's go with that. Into the night. So they started spinning in the mid-afternoon and then suddenly
turned into
it's
the
night.
Evening. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know what? I take it back. I buy it. I think your read into it is totally accurate.
Thank you. Always.
I think
right.
this is a really
deep.
This is an art house film now. It's become a foreign film.
And so they have some time to kill. Even though it's night, they have to wait until it's after dark to go to the club.
And after dark is the name of the club.
Is it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to wait until it's not just sunset, but after dark. So they go to a diner, and then there's. It's a whole weird long diner scene. So they're killing some time in a diner, and then the diner owner realizes it's dark, and he wants to get out of there real fast. And he starts to, but as he gets to the door to, like, close up, a strange group come in, and they order 6 coffees. And it's a man who has, I think he has albinism.
I don't know.
I think so.
His name's Polar Bear, though.
Well, they also call him Snowflake.
I know. I was making that.
Oh,
up.
I think they call him Snowflake.
I was just coming up with names of animals that are white.
They definitely play to his pigmentation, and
well, it's intentional. If you know, look up the actor, he doesn't have white hair. And
actually,
white skin.
This is. A little weird, but he reminded me of this person that I happen to know in a community in which I have lived. And it was a whole family. They didn't have albinism, but they were all very, very, very light. And there were rumors that they were vampires.
It's like, what's that teen or like house mom vampire series? What's it called?
Teen House Mom Vampires?
No, it's like a Lonely House Mom series. What it's
huh?
Big one. It's got Robert Pattinson or whatever. What's that series called?
Do you mean the Twilight?
Twilight.
There are zero house moms.
It was a house mom wrote it.
Yes. Is she Mormon? I feel like she's Mormon.
I'm definitely sure she's Mormon.
Okay.
But that aren't they all albinos too? Or isn't there a whole bunch of albinos in that?
Hmm.
Okay, never mind.
I think they have glittery skin. I've never
read
the books.
I do think they have glittery skin.
I think we've watched 2 of the movies. I remember a scene with the motorcycle.
There was like a spirit running next to a motorcycle. I think that's what happened. I don't remember, but I remember laughing really hard and wondering.
I remember laughing till we cried.
Oh, we should revisit that movie.
Yes. Okay, so they get into a weird fight with... Oh, it's because... With this guy, Snowflake, there's a woman, and
hey,
she's like...
Disclaimer, I have nothing against house moms. House mom in the generic notion of...
Are you covering your bases or digging your grave right now?
You know what? I'm going to say it. Screw it.
Oh.
House moms read Twilight. I think that's straightforward,
right? If you've read Twilight, you're a house mom? Even
no.
if you're a man?
No, it's more like the equivalent in the 80s of the type of people who would watch soap operas.
But are these the types that also, what's the book? The bondage book.
Oh, totally.
50 Shades of Grey.
Yes, that's exact.
Okay.
How would you describe that readership? Would you say house moms?
I'm not going to comment on
that. Holy.
Okay, so in the diner... not AJ, Keith is like making eyes at a lady who's sucking on a lollipop, but then she smiles and she has unique teeth. Kind of Bucky style. Like, remember.
They're vampires, right?
No, I don't think they are because they get attacked by the vampires later.
That's what I wanted to bring up because the whole time I have them described as vampires, but then at the end it makes zero sense.
Then they get in a fight. There's a diner fight, and then AJ gets his shirt messed up, I think. He gets weird about his clothes the whole movie. It's like
he's very confident and cocky, too. He's like, oh, I'm going to show him who's boss, and stands up and then just grabs the albino guy by his balls and holds him for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what's happening.
I think that he... Actually, it's a power move. You do that, you stare deeply into somebody's eyes, but squeeze?
I do, or they're... one does?
I don't know what you do.
What I've do you gotten do out in of your many of bar fights by this same exact move.
I feel like it's a 100% guarantee that you're going to walk out of there as the crazy person that nobody's going to mess with.
The scene lasted long enough for me to be able to write down what was happening in the scene, look up and go, oh, yeah, he's still holding them.
Yep.
It was a long scene.
It got uncomfortably long.
I'd like to think that it was a transitional period.
Was like, so this like, is the car spin.
When he grabbed the vampire albino's balls, they were now transitioning into the next phase of this art house film.
Yes. Then they make their escape from the diner.
Yes.
And also Duncan the whole time's been in the bathroom. Like pooping, I guess. And then he comes out and talks trash, and then they get in the car and go to the club because now it's officially after dark. So the club has lots of 80s thongs. There's like an announcer guy.
Thongs. I just, my note is very 80s strip club with some serious butt floss is what I wrote.
Butt floss,
it
yes.
It was tiny. It wasn't even, didn't even qualify as a thong.
Nope.
It was they were trying to, you know, when you're using practical effects on a film and you do like a thread to try and make something look like it's floating.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like somebody was trying to pull something through one of those strippers' butt cracks to make it float between her legs underneath.
Oh.
That's how thin the thong was.
I feel like if you ran a violin bow across them, you could hit a good note.
Also, AJ's wardrobe is so 80s, and I started thinking about the 80s where these guys would wear these, like, teal or purple shirts that were buttoned up without a tie. They would have some kind of funky, like, squiggle pattern, mm-hmm. but then they would wear over it a dress coat, but with the sleeves pushed up always, like,
which
big shoulders and sleeves pulled up.
Uncomfortable.
It's such a weird trend that happened, and I just think, like...
Bring it back.
No, it's really awkward. I don't get it.
Okay.
But man, he was rocking that
he
coat.
Was into it, and he was very protective of it. So there's a bunch of 80s thongs. There's the bouncer, like, laying the cast out here. There's a bouncer. There's a club owner who, throughout the movie, snacks on cockroaches for whatever reason.
Well, we find out later.
And then there's also a blonde 80s waitress who seems to recognize... Keith in particular, but she knows both Keith and AJ, and she's like, you don't remember me? I'm not going to tell you how we know each other, which would make me so furious if somebody refused to tell me why I know them. I would just be like, never mind, you don't know me now. I would leave, and I would burn everything to the ground.
This is an unfortunate side effect of my personality, is the second I can sense somebody wants me to ask a question.
How do I know you?
How do I know you? I will go out of my way to not ever ask that question. But she's this 80s babe. She's really cute and bubbly and fun.
Yeah,
I liked her in the film a lot. She was a great addition.
Yeah.
A lot of overacting, but I could tell, but that was like...
But she was charming.
That was what was needed for the role.
Yeah.
Also, she has some awesome Madonna gloves, the like lacy fingerless gloves.
Everything about her is pretty cool.
Yeah, she was really cool. I liked her a lot.
And then, so meanwhile, like there's strippers stripping. And for some reason, Keith and Duncan are sitting at one spot. It's like there's a whole reason, but it's boring. So let's not go into it. Keith and Duncan are sitting separately from AJ. They've come in separately. So nobody in the club knows that they're together.
Right.
That's kind of important, but how we get there is not. And so they're all watching strippers, looking for just the right stripper, because remember, there's still a fraternity eagerly awaiting
Do you
a
remember
stripper.
That part of the film?
And the weirdest part is also that So it's after dark. Clearly there is a kegger going on at said fraternity, the mystery fraternity.
They've already missed the party.
And it took them like 2 hours to drive there. So say it's 10 o'clock at night. They get their stripper. They arrive at this party at what, 2 in the morning?
Perfect time to arrive with the stripper.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they're waiting for the perfect stripper to appear. And then...
then we get the coolest character of them all. And boy, it is. It delivers. This was the reason why I bought the film, was because of who was on the cover. And then the scene, which is another... this is another part of the film where I've seen these photos countless times throughout my life. Just they come up constantly, especially the main scene when she first comes out with the wig and the white face and everything like that. I was like, oh, whoa, this is what it's from. So cool.
It's very strange.
It's awesome, though.
Yes, it's fascinating.
Okay, so who arrives on the scene?
So it's Katrina,
who is her name. Yep.
Played by Grace Jones.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know who Grace Jones is, go look it up. You should know, and shame.
If you don't know who Grace Jones is, you may know her as Mayday from A View to Kill, the Bond film.
I wouldn't.
Do you remember when I had some time on my hands when we lived in Denver? And I got this bright idea to, instead of do something useful, watch every single James Bond film. And I'm saying every single one.
Yes.
At this point, I think it had gone up to Casino Royale. It had just come out with the new James Bond, Daniel Craig. So that was like 21 films or something. And I watched them back to back.
And I had to hear about all of them.
And then I created, to justify what I had just done, created my own Bond Awards, where I gave individual categories of, like, you know, best and worst this, best and worst that, best gadgets, best kill scenes, all that stuff. But one of them was best Bond villain women. And she was definitely top five.
Yeah,
I think she was number two.
Yeah, so she's, like, a fascinating and unique beauty, obviously.
She's, like, the embodiment of art. She's, like, the 80s version of, like, Bjork, you know, that kind of idea where everything she does is, like, art.
Art, yes.
I mean, I know Bjork was active in the 80s, but we're talking about 90s Bjork, so...
Are we?
Well, I don't want our thousands and thousands of listeners to get on me about that.
So Grace Jones comes out and she's got white face on, which is really interesting. She's got white face, a triangle, like kind of bleachy orange wig and blue contacts. And she's got a Keith Haring, it's like a headless man chair with Keith Haring like painting on it. And then she takes off her clothes and she's also like wearing like a Keith Haring bodysuit and also a weird, it's like a spiral bra and, or like a spiral bikini set almost, like metal spiral.
It's a strange mix between like,
and it's actually Keith Haring too, we should
say.
Yeah,
yeah. There's some cool photos we'll post on our Instagram account of him, like behind the scenes painting her.
And if you don't know who Keith Haring is, just pause and go look.
Sucks to be you. But what I thought was interesting is, the Keith Haring aspect to her made it like contemporary art of the 80s, but also this weird kind of like tribal throwback where the body paint was very ancient feeling, and that played into her character because it was cool. It was really cool.
But it's weird because there's also an Egyptian quality to it that's added.
Yeah.
And then the white face on top of it was very strange, sending a lot of very confusing messages to me that I don't think they quite added up.
There were Egyptian items around her dressing room a lot, too, and I didn't know what the purpose was, but unexplored. But they probably could have done a bit more with that.
So she does a strange dance. It's not like a stripper's dance, but... AJ's like, yeah, that's perfect for a fraternity.
I loved the scene when she ends because it's so weird and she looks so weird. And then it's a hilarious, like, this is the humor landed really well here where she stops and it just pans to different faces in the crowd of all the guys.
It's
like
just a bunch of weird pervs.
Totally confused and silent, looking at each other, like looking back and forth as to what they just saw.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly one of them claps and then they're all like, Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And then they start clapping. But I like that she left them like literally speechless and dumbfounded because she's this like totally bizarre character.
And there was no nudity.
No, not at all. She's got like a spiral bikini kind of thing.
Yeah.
On.
It was very unclear what happened, but they were all into it. And AJ is like, perfect. So he goes to the hostess of this club and is like, I got to meet Katrina. And he doesn't have that accent.
Yeah, he doesn't have that accent.
Whatever. I feel like he does.
It was
and
implied.
He was hiding it. And so she leads him back to Katrina because he's going to try and proposition her to come with him on a 2-hour drive to a fraternity. And he goes into her chamber, which is... Oh, and there's also a strange scene where, like, when he's walking back to her chamber, it's like two dancers who are looking into what would be a mirror. There's like lights around it, but they're just looking at each other's faces and correcting each other's makeup instead of looking at their own reflection.
It's a weird, like, it's like a brothel almost in the back too. And it's like this weird seedy world in the back.
You get a sense that there's something creepy happening.
Yeah.
And so he goes back there. And he's in her dressing room. I also mentioned she has the coolest bra ever. It's that swirly bra. It's just the coolest thing. And then it's like a weird romance scene. Like she's seducing him.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly she grows toenails and like crazy long toenails, gets a crazy face on her and attacks AJ.
It's a very unflattering transformation. I'll say that.
Yeah. They don't hold any punches there. It's
no,
not pretty. It's not,
not
sexy.
Not pretty at all. It's definitely not sexy.
Yeah. So she kills him. And right there, AJ is done for.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that. Were you?
I was, because I thought he was, like, the hero.
It kind of reminds me of the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie, how, you know, the friend is it David Arquette that's changed so quickly? And I was like, oh. Because I kind of expected them to not
make
be changed,
the
and
end.
Then they do. And
mm-hmm.
But then I liked that. I liked that idea of them changing.
Yeah, and so then we go back to the blonde girl who seems to know Keith. She tries to lead him to where they both think AJ has gone, but it's kind of confusing. And then she seems to think he has gone not with Katrina, but with Candy, a stripper, who's at a hotel. And so she convinces Keith, I think it's just Keith, to go with her to the hotel, and Duncan stays at the strip club.
Also, we're calling her the blonde girl because she has not given her name up yet. She's been waiting
Do you remember her name?
Well, towards the end, we'll announce it because that's when she, like, says it. But
oh, yeah.
She's been trying to wait for Keith to figure out who she is.
Yes.
So we don't have a name to go off
that's
of at
right.
this point.
So what happens next? So they go to the hotel to go with... to go see if AJ is with Candy, the stripper. And then, meanwhile, back at the club, Grace Jones, Katrina character, is upset because she discovers that AJ was not, in fact, alone, but that he had two buddies with him. And so she takes it out on the hostess who had led AJ back to her and tears out her heart.
Yeah, that's a great... scene. She pulls her heart out of her chest.
Yeah, it's gross.
Pretty awesome. Before that, though, there was a couple things that happened.
Sure.
When Keith and the 80s babe are walking around, they go out into the alley, and this is when I noticed the lights. The lighting in this movie is top-notch. I would give this an A++++.
Lots
I would
of
say
pinks and greens. And...
They worked so hard on the lighting
yeah.
in this film. Even more so than the club scene in Night of the Comet. Like, I thought that was really cool lighting. And The Wraith has really cool lighting. But this...
No, this is definitely good.
Dude, this is top-notch. I loved it. Pinks, blues, greens.
They're always, like, contrasting or complementary colors, but they work well in a way that's believable.
Yeah, and that's when we really start getting introduced to it, and it's going to play a major role in the rest of the film is the lighting. I just wanted to point that out because it was really
it's
awesome.
Good. So then we go back to the hotel, and then they're on an elevator, and it's all kind of, like, awkward and creepy, and nothing's quite right.
It's shot a lot like... like Parents and Dr. Caligari, that same style.
That's it's a little like stilted, a
and
little
twisted
awkward.
Angles. Like the angles are really off, and the acting is really kind of strange. The lighting's weird. I like it. It's definitely like a subgenre of 80s horror.
Yeah, and then the girl, the blonde girl, and Keith get separated. Like he accidentally steps off on the wrong floor
in the elevator.
Yeah, of the elevator. Sorry, and then tries to get back on, and he gets caught in an elevator and almost dies. So then we go back to the bouncer at the club, and he's claiming to be in love with Grace Jones' character, Katrina, but he's been like letting her just sample his blood, so he's obsessed with her, and she kind of gets between real bloodlust whatever moments by sampling the bouncer. Do you have anything you want to add to what's happening at the club?
I didn't write this whole part down because I just skipped to when Keith runs into the vamps from the diner in the alley.
They're not vampires, I don't think, but they're
describing them as such for
now. So he comes across Snowball or Snowflake, and the six coffees he ordered are explained. So it was him and then his weird family who all are kind of, I don't get it.
Either we missed something right away or it just was never explained.
I don't think it was explained.
But the chase scene happens.
They want to get him.
Yeah. And the 80s music, that like Asian Beverly Hills Cop mix is in full effect.
It is.
It's so indicative of this era.
Yes.
And I don't know why this was a thing. And anybody who's familiar with 80s movies will know. I don't have to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, I can't explain it. It's like this weird percussive, like, do-do-do-do-do-do-do drumming, but with, like, boo-woo-woo-woo, you know, like, weird flute, like, Asian music. I don't get it at all.
It's but like, and generically, Asian.
I didn't understand why it was this sound, because it wasn't like a kung fu movie.
No.
Even
it
like Golden Child
sense.
Makes sense. Big Trouble in Little China makes sense for that style. This does not make sense to have this soundtrack.
Nope. It was very weird.
Although I'm not against it because it was really fun. I would definitely buy the score. It just did not fit the film at all.
All right. So the weird family is chasing down Keith. I don't know what happened to the blonde girl. I don't remember. I don't think it matters.
I know why you don't remember.
Whatever. So he hides in the sewer. My notes get a little spotty after this.
We're about to pause the movie for the night, right?
He hides in the sewer. Keith does. And he, like, is walking around in the sewer trying to escape them. Takes a little sewer walk. And then he sees a sewer guy eat a rat.
Yeah, and the lighting in the sewer is so cool.
It's basically like fluorescent.
It's got like
colors.
Pink lights coming in one side, green. The manhole cover that's from above has just blue and purple coming through it. Oh man, I love this. This would be my top pick for best 80s lighting. I think ever.
Like, it's really good.
They really put all their effort into that, and maybe forgot to tell some of the story, but it doesn't matter.
And then I think it's AJ kicks through the brick wall like you do. And then Keith gets out of the sewer and hides in a garbage can. Oh, wait. But then somebody finds AJ dead. Oh, nope. Because does Keith kick through the brick wall?
Yeah. And it doesn't really matter because we're just getting.
Somebody kicks through a brick wall.
We're getting out of the
AJ's
chase scene.
Dead.
Well, Keith finds AJ here in a dumpster.
In the dumpster.
Yeah.
So it must have been Keith who kicked through a brick wall.
I like watching you struggle through this part
okay,
of the movie
so
to
let's,
tell the notes.
Let's explain. I fell asleep.
Yeah.
I wrote some notes.
Shocker for Laser Grave. This is a Laser Grave's first where I fell asleep during the movie we're
Whatever.
Reviewing.
And then, yep. So this is where I fell asleep and my note says, I think there's a garbage truck chase happening.
Well, it's back to Katrina and the club owner, and she slits her wrists, and he drinks out of her wrists. Mm-hmm. And then he says, it's a nasty habit.
Mm-hmm. This is the guy that's been eating the roaches.
Right. And then the soundtrack changes here. It's pretty cool. It's kind of post-punky, and I don't know why it changed, but I didn't even look up. I think that the writer of the film was writing a lot of the music too, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I want to look into it more. And then AJ returns. This is where he comes back.
Keith has
sometimes he comes back.
Keith has hidden in the bathroom.
Sometimes he comes back again.
Okay. And he has spotted AJ's corpse, but then all of a sudden AJ reappears, but he's a vampire and he tries to kill Keith. And then he insults AJ about being boring. Keith insults his friend about being boring, I think.
Okay.
And does he kill AJ at this point? Or AJ... he shoves something into his chest, right?
Well, AJ wants to be killed because he's like, look, dude, I can't live like this. Yeah. Just kill me. And so he like doesn't want to. And he said, you're willing to die for me, man. Because they're best friends. And then AJ just shoves the board into his chest without Keith doing it anyway, because he just doesn't want to live like a vampire.
Okay.
And then Keith kills another vampire who happens to be kind of a cameo, I guess. We were talking about 80s personalities, and one of the 80s personalities in this film is Lisa Lyons, who's a bodybuilder from the 80s. She was a subject of a lot of Robert Mapplethorpe photography and stuff, and she plays a vampire. And he kills her with a shoe, which is pretty funny. That was a good scene.
I missed that. That would be under lots of talk, fell asleep.
Yeah. And then AJ then wants to eat Keith.
Because then... AJ's not dead?
Oh, no, he hadn't killed him yet. Sorry. No, yeah. Lisa Lyons comes when they're talking, and then he kills her, and then it goes to AJ and Keith having this, like, heart-to-heart about it, and then AJ wants to eat Keith, and that's when he's realizing, like, you need to just kill me. That's what happened. Sorry. Okay. And he has this quote where he says, you carry my next meal around in your veins. Oh. Yeah, and then AJ says...
That's an intense thing to tell your friend.
Well, he also says this cool 80s vamp lingo, which I thought was cool, as he says, stake me out. I can't go on.
Aww.
Yeah,
that's
and
like
this
if Bill
is...
and Ted were vampires.
Yeah, and he also has really cool vampire eyes. I love... I don't know if you've caught on to this too, but 80s... The look for an 80s vampire was very distinctive. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what later fed into Buffy, like that style of makeup. But they had very distinctive eyes, which were really light with like a dark round... you know, the outside was dark, really, really light, and then a really dark pupil. And he's got it. It's in Fright Night. It's in Lost Boys.
That's like, probably why I'm afraid of people with those crazy blue eyes.
Yeah, it's like, really cool, though. It's
the
very,
light blue eyes.
It's very 80s vampire. Yeah. And I liked it because they had the eyes in this, too, and they looked really cool.
So this is where I wrote, fell asleep, and then I write back. So it's the next day. Because we had to stop because I couldn't stay awake.
Okay, well, Keith tries to escape, but has a long, long talk with the bar owner. It's really, really unnecessary.
That was probably the lots of talk part that I wrote.
Yeah, and then Keith gets the idea to burn the entire place down with alcohol. He cooks up this master plan where he's like, give me a shot. Now give me two shots. Give me a triple shot. Just give me the bottle. And then he looks at the 80s babe, and then he just starts pouring alcohol everywhere. And pours it on to the bar owner and then lights the place on fire. And he also orders Bacardi, which is a rum.
Mm-hmm. Did you look up the alcohol volume?
No, but he asks for brandy. It's all very confusing. And then they make their escape because the place is going up in flames.
What's with... Okay, because this is where we pick up when I... The next day, I have that there is a garbage truck and a tow truck sandwich.
Yeah, this is not yet. So... They set the place on fire, and Duncan, Keith, and the girl escape. There's a very dramatic parallel parking scene that you missed. You'll just have to go back.
I feel like every parallel parking scene ever.
It was like a public service announcement announcement for parallel parking. But then Duncan is a vampire because he is in the back seat, and he's like, "Ugh, I don't feel so good," and then turns into a vampire. And then the car gets caught on fire and blows up with him in it. And I thought, poor dude. I hate in vampire movies, by the way, when people get turned and then immediately die and they don't even get to experience what it was like to really be a vampire.
Well, he got mean. And also, this is right during the garbage truck, tow truck sandwich. Because Keith is looking in the rearview mirror and he's like, "Ooh, I can't see my friend's reflection." And so it's all over for Duncan. And poor Duncan, like, yes, he didn't get to experience being a vampire, but he didn't get to experience being a human either.
Yeah.
I feel empathy for Duncan.
It's a tragedy. We should have a side movie, a spin-off, Duncan's Adventures.
Yeah, except for skipping the weird pervy parts of Duncan.
Yeah, well, then it wouldn't be an 80s movie with him.
So the car gets into an accident and then wildly explodes.
Yeah, it's very unnecessary.
And it's then... like if you've ever been in a car accident, your car just like won't, it hits something. But this was like, oh, and it's a raging inferno instantly.
I always imagine on a movie like this, the stunt coordinator or something is like, "Dudes, I've got it. It's cool. We'll just put a little gas here. It'll be a minor explosion." Mm-hmm. And then it's like a full on like nuclear blast. And he's like, "Oh, that works too."
Well, knowing a stuntman.
Yeah, it's true. We do know a Hollywood stuntman.
One of our friends is a stuntman. And I feel like I could see him going, "Let's get this thing cooking.
Yeah, a little more fire, please. Yeah, just a bit more explosion. We're going to really make it worth it."
I feel like the stuntman was like, "This is boring until it's a raging inferno."
Yeah, so, and then the girl and Keith then run into a like pawn shop where they see weapons, and he's like, "Oh, I'm going to go in there." She goes in there, but she kind of like sneaks in before he even notices, and he's a little weirded out, but he busts through the glass. He grabs a gun.
No, he grabs a bow and arrow.
No, he grabs a gun first, and then he goes over and a really disturbing scene just shoves all the guitars that are hanging into each other to grab a bow that's behind it.
That disturbs you?
It disturbs me for this reason, that they probably were given permission to shoot in an actual pawn shop for the night, and an actor was like method acting in the moment. And just shoved the actual goods that this pawn shop owner probably had to try and sell the next day, I would have been pretty upset. So hopefully they cover the cost of that. But he grabs the bow and then he turns around and pulls the arrow on her. And it says, "Who are you?" And she's like, "Look, man, I have no fangs. I'm not one of them." And then he shoots the arrow and it hits a vampire that was coming up right behind her. And she screams and goes to him. But then there's this very confusing scene.
That is never explained.
And then I was like, did we read into it wrong? Or did they just screw up or change the ending? But it is very clear because I've watched it twice because I had to rewind it because you fell asleep during this whole scene.
Whatever.
Both times I distinctly noticed she does not have a reflection.
Well, there's like a shot of the mirror. Concave. Mirror, whatever. One of those
dropping science on Lays of Graves.
No. And it's like a shot of her, but she's not there.
So yeah,
like,
and I was
she's
like,
clearly a vampire.
Here we go. This is the twist for the third act, but nope. It never never plays a role in anything.
But she does have a rad zebra coat. Like zebra
and zebra
print.
Pants.
No, she has tiger pants and a zebra coat. And I was like, what? She took it.
It's like
to
her
the
pants are attacking her coat.
Oh, it's like the aftermath of a safari gone bad. Anyway, so she's not in the mirror. And then there are, at this point, suddenly vampires just everywhere.
Yeah, my thought was that it's like a thriller video, but exchange the zombies for vampires.
Yeah.
They come out of this like, with cool lighting and fog, and they're just appearing out of nowhere. And it's every shape. Yeah, there's a bus driver, every shape and form. I loved it.
And then
so cool.
Out of nowhere comes the albino crew again.
Yeah, the blonde guy comes and says... he looks over and he sees there's another group of like vampires and he says, "What gang is this?"
Yeah.
And then we get one of the greatest scenes in the whole film, which is the little girl. There's a little girl vampire, like a Kirsten Dunst from Interview of the Vampire style vampire. And he looks at her and then she very quickly flies through the air. But the string that she's on, the like harness, I don't think they really weighted it right.
No.
Because her feet go up a lot higher than her shoulders.
It's like she's dive bombing him.
She just rolls with it and flies at him and kills him. And that's when I thought, I guess these are not vampires. I am so unclear as to what's happening.
Also, this is when I realized the lead guy, Snowball, Snowflake, whatever, he has been reminding me of somebody and I couldn't figure it out. And it was at this moment that I went, oh, he reminded me, like, of Tilda Swinton.
I could see that easily.
Yeah.
But with, like, the dumbest jacket in the world.
And the worst hair.
The jacket was so stupid, but yet it was like they thought it was cool.
Yeah. It was. He was a cool dude.
He kind of reminded me of the guy in Night of the Comet who... is the main, like, villain that's in that warehouse who thinks he's really cool, but is not really cool.
No.
Those are the same kind of character. And then the girl, his girlfriend, or whatever the girl, like, reveals who she is.
And it's the most boring reveal ever.
It's like there's nothing to it.
She played Spin the Bottle with him once?
Yeah, nobody cares.
Okay.
And then...
And her name's Allison.
Yeah, her name's Allison. And then they go underground back into the sewers and discover... The vampire lair.
It's like a, there's a bunch of corpses and sarcophagi, but they quickly run, Allison and Keith run and hide because I guess the night's almost over and all the vampires are coming back to settle in to sleep. And then what is with all of the tubs of gasoline? They're just everywhere. And they're like, oh, let's tip these over. It's perfect. They carefully set, like, giant, like, with the barrels, no top.
Well, they're like 50-gallon buckets.
Yeah, with no lid on it.
Sure, that's what you
just,
do.
Just, you knock it over, you light your match, you're good to go. Vampire torching.
Also, I really love vampire lairs in movies. I
think
they're
do?
Great. And it reminded me of
scary.
Other vampire films. And I thought about 80s vampire films. Do you have favorite 80s vampire films?
Well, no, because I was very sheltered during the 80s.
Yeah, but you've made up for lost time.
Yeah, but I don't think I have a favorite. They're all kind of on the same playing field for me.
You don't have ones that stand out for you?
I feel like you want me to say a specific
Well,
answer.
I just thought you would, I guess. But, I mean, like Lost Boys comes to mind, obviously.
Yeah, but I didn't see it until, like, the late 90s.
Yeah, but I didn't ask when you saw it. I was asking if you had favorite 80s vampire movies.
I don't. What are yours? Lost Boys and?
Fright Night's great. The Hunger. I mean, they're
come
great.
Come on. Name 80s
Work
vampire
movies. Work with me here. Work with me.
No. I refuse.
I've got one for you.
What?
It's called Vamp. We're talking about it.
Oh.
So they light the vampires on fire, or the vamps.
The vamps.
On fire.
Well, there's only one vamp. It's Grace Jones.
No, they're all in their coffins.
Yeah, but she's the vamp. They're the vampires. She's, like, the one.
Oh, is vamp supposed to, like, denote, like...
It seemed like she was the bigwig.
Okay.
She was the vamp. The rest are just the vampires.
Vamp juniors.
Yeah, vampy babies.
So they're lurking in the sewer is Katrina. She's there, and she shows up, and she's
nighttime.
Very bald and very threatening.
I would be so... I would poo my pants and die if I saw her.
Wow.
Shush. In the, imagine creeping around the sewers, and then you see that, and you're like, never mind. I'm just going to have a heart attack right now.
And then she'd smell your pants, and she'd be like... This is very anticlimactic. It's got a little bit of a payoff, but not much.
Nope.
Keith pulls out the bow and arrow and just shoots her.
She grabs Allison and then he shoots her.
Yeah, he shoots her, no problem, through the mouth.
Ouch.
Pins her up. Then Allison grabs this, like, stake and shoves it through her heart.
Mm-hmm.
But then she's like, all she does is laugh.
Yeah.
I don't think she says a single line in this whole movie, by the way.
Think so either.
She just laughs scary. It's really great. And I would love to get paid for that. And she's laughing, but then
he lets the sun in.
Well, she comes back. Like, she was not affected by an arrow through the mouth or through the heart.
Well, she's affected, but she's, like, not fully dead. So that's when he lets the sun in, and that's what does her in.
Well, and she's coming at him, and she's got, with the bald head and the long nails, she's very Nosferatu.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. or Peter, if you want to go with what we do in the shadows. But it's that same style. And I thought that was really cool. And it was like classic kind of throwback to the vampire.
And then we get to the how she dies. And it's the coolest death scene possibly in a movie ever. She's skeletal. Yes. And what does she do?
Well, it starts with an interesting death, to say the least. It's like a Ghostbusters spirit exiting her body first. It's got
it's like
the
green
spirits coming up. And I thought, wait, what's happening right now?
It was long. And then her skin like flaps upward for
a really
long time.
It's supposed to like melt and flake off, but it looks...
But it's going upward.
Not working.
Yeah.
But then she fully melts to a skeleton. And this is the scene that I have seen like a meme of it so many times on social media. And I've always wondered what it was from. And now I know. Her skeleton hand reaches up and flips them off. And then the skeleton hand falls over.
And then she's dead.
The coolest scene.
Yeah.
Ever.
Coolest death scene by far.
So great. Then they go to leave the sewer, and he gets this idea of, like, wait, there's sunlight coming. He still doesn't trust her, and he says, hey.
Her being Allison.
Yeah, come up here and look at this.
Because he's bleeding, and she, like, weirdly lick kisses his
blood.
Yeah,
just so we can go back on this. So she has no reflection. She is weird about a lot of things. She's licking blood off of him. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other things that happen, too. And then so he opens the manhole and the light shines on her and she's like, ah, it's bright. And then we realize, oh,
she's fine.
She's normal, I guess. Mm. It doesn't burn. They come out of the manhole onto the street. And what do we get in the distance? Do you remember?
No, because you've forgotten.
Oh, the whole AJ scene?
AJ comes back.
I just didn't care.
It matters because...
Okay.
First of all,
he comes back...
The bouncer comes back.
Well, sometimes they come back.
And then AJ kills the bouncer. So he saves them and he's like, see, look, we're buds still. And they agree that they're going to go up into the sunlight and he's going to trail behind or below them in the sewers.
Yeah.
And it'll work out for him.
Yeah, so fine. They're going to like meet up somewhere else. He'll take the sewer route like the Ninja Turtles and they'll take above ground. Like the foot soldiers, and they'll meet up later.
And they say, this has been one wacky night. And then they kiss. And then there's a rainbow.
There you go.
What? What?
That's the film. That's Vamp.
Okay.
A+ for me. 5 out of 5 stars for me.
So I had a thought. It seemed kind of like, for a long time, I was thinking there was like a purgatory or a hell that they had found themselves in, like they had died in the car accident.
Wow, you really overthought this film.
I was trying, like my brain was just desperate for any logical toehold, and there were none to be found.
Well, maybe if you had the toenails of Katrina when she transformed, you would have a stronger toehold.
Touché.
I thought of it more like... Once Bitten and all those like those great Love at First Bite, you know, those cheesy 80s vampire
movies. But they had like the weird art element to it, which was off-putting because it puts you in sort of the Hunger realm when you've got Keith Haring and Grace Jones.
True. Yeah, I would agree.
So you're looking for some more artistic content when it does not ever present itself, at least in a fully cohesive manner.
But at the same time, it's like classic 80s horror.
It was great. I loved it too, but I kept trying to figure out what they were trying to accomplish. Because sometimes with those 80s movies, you're just like, yep, I'm on this roller coaster. But I kept trying to figure out like the artistic vision, and they're really... wasn't a cohesive vision that I could discover.
No, but it looked amazing. The whole film looked really cool.
Yeah, I would definitely fall asleep watching it again.
Oh, good. That's good to know. So there you go. Well, that's it for this episode. Vamp was fun. I'm really glad we watched it. I don't know what we're doing next week. But as always, it'll be 80s. And if you like what you hear, please like rate, subscribe, download. We're on.
Share it with a friend.
Yeah, yeah. Tell a friend if they're into 80s stuff and just say, oh, I know what you dig. And we're on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean. We're on a bunch of other ones. I just don't know what they are because it's, I don't know. It's they're out there. But you can follow us on Instagram at LaserGraves. Mm-hmm. You can follow me on Instagram at EK Wimmer.
I'm at Mariah Rosewar.
And thanks for listening.
Thank you.
We look forward to next week when we come back at you. All right. Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.